Hey everybody, it's Caddy. You are in the January Cafe. January is always JT. It's supposed to, I think it's a cool thing because you start off the year, John. Welcome, by the way. Well, before I go off on a tangent, welcome to the cafe, the January 2024. You set the tone for the year.
Why is that a good thing, do you think?
Because you set the tone. Your presence sets the standard, the bar for the rest of the guys.
I bet you say that to all the boys.
I really don't. But anyway, also because yours is the first and we just ended December with the year-end cafes, I feel like you're the only band member that really gets a theme each year. I remember one year you did something on like your favorite Bowie album, and then another year I forget what we did. We talked about a whole bunch of Duran releases, and this cafe we are going to devote to the Dingwall bass guitars.
Oh, okay.
Why not?
Of which I just happen to have three within reach of me.
Oh my goodness. This is going to be a treat and a half. Well, I did some research. I had a little help with my research, but I'm going to start because I work with you and I don't know the answer to a lot of these questions. So I want to know how you came into, how you connected with Dingwall bass guitars to begin with. Did they come to you? Did you go to them?
No. I was in Toronto and Bernie, my tech, and I were having dinner with a friend of ours who was also a bass manufacturer. And he brought Dingwall up in the conversation, and we got our phones out and we had a look at their website, and I just took one look at their designs and I thought, oh my God, I've got to try one of those. I loved the way they looked, and you know, that was about, you know, that was before the Future Past album, so.
Oh.
You know, that had to be five, six years ago, maybe.
Pre-COVID.
And yeah. And, you know, and, you know, they've always been very generous with me. They would find me guitars to use. And, you know, I was buying guitars, but they were loaning me guitars. And we started to, you know, when I've been using, you know, for so long, I was using PV. I was using the same basses every night. And, you know, to make that change, you know, you can't do it overnight. You have to do it sort of gradually. And, you know, and I gradually brought more Dingwall basses into the show. And then when we went to work on the Future Past album, that was the first time that I took them into the studio. And so by the time we came out and we were touring Future Past, I was like all Dingwall all of the time. And, you know, Sheldon Dingwall, it is his company, you know, and he is very hands-on in the way that he runs his company and develops his products. And he liked the idea of doing a signature model with me. And I was not averse to that idea. And, you know, and he came up with this kind of rad idea, which was going to the Neve company in England, who were the company that were, well, very famous for building mixing desks. And it was one of their desks, actually, that was used for the mixing of the Rio album, for the making of the Rio album, actually. You know, his desks were in Air Studios in London and Chipping Norton and basically wherever that album was done. And he went to the technicians at Neve and said, I'd like you to work on this bass for John Taylor. You know, how do you feel about creating some onboard electronic systems that would, you know, that would not replicate, but somehow reference the kinds of sounds of that era? And they got really excited about it. They'd never done anything like that. And I think from what Sheldon tells me, most of the technicians at Neve are bass players. So they got really excited about it. So nobody really knew how it was going to work out. I took delivery of the first model with the Neve electronics like before the last British tour. And within the space of about a month, you know, I toured with the basses in the UK and gone into the studio with Josh Blair, and everybody was just raving about the sound. Everybody just loved the sound. So, you know, we put out, the first thing we did was that was the limited edition Rio 82, I think, which is limited edition.
Well,
It's
wait,
in
you're
the,
answering all my questions before I get to
well,
ask them. So here's my
okay.
next question. How did you
Yeah.
come up with the Rio Dream Bass concept? And how did you, and the visual design of the bass?
Well, I work with Patty Palazzo on the visuals.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know how the name came to me. I mean, sometimes you've just got to cut to the chase, you know, and not be too oblique, you know. And I came up with the idea of the Rio Dream, and we kind of came up with this kind of Nagel-esque styling, and we played with some different colorways, and I just thought, you know, what would be the most fun? What would you want the Rio bass to look like? Would you want it to be in those signature colors? You know, it's such a, the design of that album is so iconic. You know, it just felt like, you know, where else could you possibly want to go with that? And I mean, the, and having done that, and we went with the limited 82 basses, which I am happy to announce are finally being shipped. We had some real problems with supply chain, and
Yes.
whereas we were, you know, the basses were being sold almost a year ago, and I don't think anybody's gotten them yet. I think we're about to announce that they are in fact on their way. And the orders are being fulfilled. It's a very particular way that you have to order it. We can't do direct to customer,
Right, no
which is what
direct
I wanted
sales.
to do. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, everybody that's ordered them, they are sent to a music store nearby, and that's where they can pick them up. The details are all available. You know, if you've ordered a bass, you'll know where to get them from. But that's, you know, that's good. So that's moving the 82 along. And
I
now
want to
I
ask
think,
some more questions about the
sure,
82.
go. Okay.
So in the design details, there are two stripes echoing the Rio album cover, as well as the R from the Rio type, which is, I think,
Yeah.
on the top of the bass. Is that correct?
Yeah. The headstock, as they call it.
Okay. And then there's an I inlay on a
Yes.
fret.
Yes.
Yeah. And on every single one, is it in the exact same place?
It is, yeah, because it has to be at the octave.
Oh, right. That's so
Yeah.
cool, though.
Actually, is it at the octave? No, it's not at the octave, is it? It's yes, it is. Is it?
It's on the
What am
12th fret, I
I?
think. You can see I did some research here.
Yeah, I mean, I've got, this is actually my favorite of the new model, which is the sea foam green, but I think I call it, I forget what I call it. I've got another name for it, but this is going to be the next round of basses that are going to be going on sale, and I think they're announcing them at the NAMM Music Fair. Is the green, and this is one of my favorites, this primrose version, which I've been using. I was using on tour last summer, these, and this one's really exciting. It's super cool. And this is the 5-string version in black.
That's what I was going to ask. Now, how many versions of the bass have five strings? Just the black one, or they all
No,
can
well,
come?
I believe that all three colors are available in 5-string versions. That was Sheldon's call. I think that they sell surprisingly so many 5-strings that they wanted to make all the colorways available as 5-strings.
So for someone like me who doesn't know anything about bass, what is the difference between a four and a five string bass?
Well,
Just the string, but.
yeah, it's got the 5-string has got a lower, has got a low B string underneath the E string. And the 5-string basses came along, I would say, early to mid 80s. They never really appealed to me. They really, the first users, I would say, were in jazz and then R&B. All my all the cla for me, all of the classic bass lines are played on four string basses. But this expanded version of the bass became very popular in the mid to late 80s. And then you got six string basses. I mean, now you've got eight string basses, you've got 12 string basses. But I'm a bit of a Puritan, actually, and I tend to stick to the four string. But I did play this five string on Nightboat, for instance, the new version of Nightboat that's on Dance Macabre. And I love playing it. It sounds fantastic.
I was going to ask if you had played it at all. Just looking at my notes, you did bring up the Neve preamp, which had never been done before. Is that, I'm trying to picture it in my mind. Is it like when you have a synthesizer and you put like a sound card in it? Is that, am I?
No, it's like when you plug an instrument into a console, and then you affect that console with treble, bass, middle, and you affect it like an equalizer almost. And it's that. It's like having that console, that strip of knobs within the bass. I mean, look, what's different about it is the fact that Neve did it. You
Yeah.
know, that it's that we've brought in these, and I mean they're legends within the sort of sound recording world. And what was really exciting was like when we plugged it in and listened to it, and I thought, wow, what is it gonna come out just sounding like Rio? Save a Prayer. Is it just gonna be that sound? But it's not like that at all. It's a really it is that, but it's so much more than that. It has the most amazing wide range of sound possibility. It's just the most fun to play bass I've ever owned, I think. I just love digging into it. There's just a lot of versatility in it. I mean, I'm still figuring it out. I'm still seeing, learning, just how much there is in it.
That's so cool. And now I remember many, many, many years ago, and I don't want to use the word vanity. That's not it, but I think it was well, I don't know the right word, but you did have a Juicy Bass guitar, right? At one point. And but this is totally different. Would you say, go ahead.
It's different to that in that that was a pretty affordable, that was a very, I took what was the most affordable version of the PV bass that I was using at the time, and then we jazzed it up with design, and applications, and we put it in a special case, and there was like a little amplifier that went with it. I mean, it was this is more of a, shall I say, prestige kind of product, really. I think that the PV was almost like if we'd done a signature Volkswagen, a small car, a great car, but a small car nonetheless, and jazzed it up with, colorways and matching upholstery and all that. This is more like doing a Mercedes, really. It's a serious piece of kit.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If you were just learning to play bass, even though you certainly could buy one of these, this is more for a serious musician, I would think, or a serious musician would want to play this.
Yeah, it's definitely a musician's instrument,
And you said there were 82 of the Rio bass, which is fun. I get that. And
And it's just,
now.
that's in a special case with a strap and blah, blah, blah. The next round
Yeah.
are unlimited. They're going to be on the market and available for as long as people are interested in buying them.
Wow, I'm gonna start saving. And do you think you'll do more with Damon?
Well,
Have you discussed?
I don't know what more we could do, really. I'd like to do a fretless. I haven't talked to Sheldon about that, but that's something that we haven't done, and I've an idea or two about how I'd like to do that. So maybe I can hit him up for that at some point in the future. But we need to get, but we need to, get our commitments, fulfill the commitments that we've already made, I think, before we move on to anything else.
Well, you could always do, look, I'm brainstorming like another bit, like a Notorious base, maybe, because don't you think that was, I feel like that was your, I don't want to say Notorious is underrated because it's not, but that was definitely a more funky bass driven album to me. I don't know why I'm just bringing it. I'm just having a conversation with you. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I don't know how much it costs to make a bass. Or anything, but it's, I don't know. That
That
seems
was the
like.
era. That was the era of the Kubiki bass, which was really the first bass that I started using after Aria, and I used Aria all through the early 80s. Aria. On the first three albums. And then when we came back to do first three plus Power Station, but then when we came back to do Notorious, I found these Philip Kubicki basses. And I mean, this one's definitely for the bass nerds, but they'll remember this particular bass. And it didn't have tuning pegs at the top, which was kind of like the Steinberger model. And it, what it had, which I loved, it had a drop down D, which meant that you kind of flicked a button and the D string became an E string. And that suddenly meant that I, no, sorry, the E string became a D string. So it was like a next step lower, kind of before the five strings came in.
Yeah.
So Notorious, a lot of Notorious was done on, oh my God, Siri heard me. And Siri's like, I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear you. So yeah, I think Notorious was done on the Kubiki, and that and I used that on that tour. I don't, I mean, nice idea, but I'm not sure I would go down that road. I think that this is super iconic what we've done here, and
Yeah.
I think it's just, I mean, at the end of the day, it's Rio, which was voted like the number two greatest bass line of all time by bass players of the world, So I think that's the line. I know my legacy, and I th you know and that is the line that's going to be on my tombstone.
Is it? No. I'm very gullible. Every now and again I'm on, checking Facebook or something and not on Duran Duran social media, and it will recommend something to me. And it recommended a conversation on whether or not John Taylor, since you like Duran Duran, said it was a conversation about whether or not John Taylor is a good bass player. And I was like, whoa, I have to see this. And you should see what people say about you. I was like, oh, I was going to screenshot it and send it to you. But yes, you are apparently an incredible bass player. I mean, I knew that, but it was nice to see other people. And like some people would write in and be like, all I listen to is like jazz, or all I listen to is prog rock, and that guy's a sick bass player. So pretty
Well, that's
nice,
very nice. I think
dude.
I've just been, I've made a point of assimilating a number of different styles. I mean, when I watch, I mean, I don't know, I think we talked about it, but the Beatles Get Back, and I'm just and I'm just listening to like every note that Paul McCartney plays in that 8-hour documentary is on point. There's not one bad note. I mean, I cannot even imagine how many bad notes there would be in an 8-hour documentary of the making of Duran Duran album, And there's also, so many funky players, so many black players of the 70s that played on so many amazing, amazing albums. I was listening to the Fat Bat Band yesterday, and just, players whose names are unknown to most people, And I don't know, I just try to honor all those amazing bass players that came before me. I love John Wetton. I love John Gustafsson. I was listening to, I still listen to a lot of the sort of mid-period Roxy Music records like Country Life and Stranded. And then George Murray is one of my absolute favorites. I came back to America after Christmas, and all I was listening to was the Heroes, Low, Gary Monster's album, Station to Station albums of Bowie. And it's not even about Bowie. I mean, I love what Bowie's doing, but what I really love is what Dennis Davis and George Murray are doing on the rhythm section. I mean, it's so what they were doing in the mid-70s was so exciting. And I think if Roger and I were to point to any one rhythm section that were inspiring us when we started playing together, it was that rhythm section. And you go back and you think, oh my God, I was 15 when I heard that for the first time, and it's so good. And you don't realize, sometimes you don't realize at the time how good, how high the level is, and sometimes you don't realize how low it is, like now. But but like what Bowie was doing, what Bowie's rhythm section was doing, and then what Eno was doing to that rhythm section and making them sound like no other rhythm section in history. I mean, that's, if you really want to see the John and Roger DNA, if you really want to hear that, you listen to Station to Station, and then Low, and then Heroes particularly, and bring it up to Scary Monsters, Fashion, Ashes to Ashes, and you've really got the essence of what Roger and I were about. Even though we came together as a couple of punks who, in my case, couldn't really play that much. I mean, I didn't pick up a bass until Roger was playing drums with us. I mean, I still thought I was going to be the guitar player, but there was a bass knocking around in the room, in the practice room. I picked it up one afternoon and started playing with him, and that was it. I really liked, I loved. I found it a very comfortable place to be, playing, really just all, thinking about how do I play tightly with Roger? How do I play? How do I match him beat for beat? How do I meet his bass drum? How do I meet his snare drum? And, and we're still, that's where we're at. It was like we wrote, that was it. That was, we knew we were going to take that seriously. And there were many, there weren't many artists that were thinking like that at the time. I think the Police were, but I don't know that there were that many bands of that punk era that were thinking like that. But then, if you think about the post-punk era, whether you're thinking like Public Image or the Gang of Four or Wire, or any, it's like suddenly bass and drums is crucial. And whereas with punk rock, it was just like everybody was just, it was a guitar driven music. That subsequent era of like post-punk and let's call it new wave, suddenly it was about music to dance to, and rhythm sections became really important. So it was a great time to be a rhythm section, the early 80s.
But isn't it wild though that you had, were you any good at guitar? I mean, were you pretty good guitar player before you picked up
No.
the bass? I mean, how
No, not really.
outstanding.
I don't know if I would have had the discipline, to have really taken my guitar playing to be of any importance. I mean, I had three guitar players that I was into as a player. One was Phil Manzanera, Roxy Music guitar player, and he sort of distorted psychedelic lead parts. Then there was Johnny Thunders, who was in the New York Dolls, and I worshipped him when I was 16, and his style, which was just like a fuck you rock and roll style. But then I was into Nile Rodgers, and I was into that waka waka rhythm thing. And so even before Andy joined, kind of like the early Duran demos that you can hear on, you can hear those, where I'm playing guitar and I'm playing bass as well. And so I just think whatever it was that I did in with guitar, it was just enough to kind of get me warmed up into picking up a bass and looking like I, as soon as I picked up a bass, I felt that I kind of knew enough to make a decent sound on it.
Yeah. It's so wild to me. I mean, I
Yeah,
think I knew
yeah.
it, but we never really discussed
Well,
it. And then.
it was a really extraordinary time. I love art and painting particularly, but the history of art, and I find that the end of the 19th century is a really fascinating time because it's really about the crossover from like technical ability to an expression of feeling. And you've got painters that are being paid, to paint in incredible detail, Napoleon's like wedding, or and then you've got Van Gogh coming on the heels of that, sort of scratching the canvas and just wanting to do something that is just so full of emotion and feeling. And it's like and never sold a painting because people said, that's not painting, that's crap. And then you had Monet and Manet and all the impressionists that came after that. Plus, you've got the camera coming along, so nobody really needs to be doing those labored over technically perfect portraits anymore. And punk rock was like that. It was like everybody was like every musician in the 70s was like, how do I have to play better? I have to play better. I've got to play virtuosically. I've got to play that. And then punk came along and said, no, you don't. No, you do not. You need three, you need to, you only need to know three chords and just make sure you look good. And that's it, And so we were born out of that moment. And I mean, like the fact that we have been able to take that, which is a pretty simplistic kind of manifesto, really, and turn it into a lifetime career in music. I mean, I have to say the Clash were kind of interesting, were extraordinary in that they did, in the time that they were together, they went from being a very, very roots oriented, very primal, rock and roll punk band. And they learned to adapt and they became very versatile. So by the end, they were doing, disco, funk, reggae, Motown, by Sandinista and their last album, well, Combat Rock. They were doing all sorts of things. I've always appreciated versatility in bands. I went to see the Eagles the other night. I'm just going to say this, that I went to see the Eagles the other night. It's their farewell tour. It was a personal invite from Don Henley, I will say. Thank you very much, Don, who had read my book, Believe It or Not, and loved it. And it was a personal invite that got Gila and I down to the forum. And I have to say, it blew my mind. And the only thing that I would liken it to was Simon and I went to see Fleetwood Mac about 6 years ago, and we came out just like stunned. The level of musicianship, 40 years, 50 years of songwriting, masterworks. I would say that anybody that has never seen them, you will never see another band like that again. It's like I tell people to go and see Chic, Nile Rodgers, because you will never see another band like that. You will never get that kind of expertise, that mastery of instruments, that care of songwriting come together like that. It was the first show that I stayed to the end in God knows how long, over a decade, I would say. It was I loved it. I couldn't stop thinking about it for days.
And
Highly recommended.
who plays bass for the Eagles? Because I don't know. Don plays
Timothy
drums.
Schmidt.
Oh
Timothy
yeah,
Schmidt is the
Timothy
bass
V.
player.
Schmidt. That's
Yeah.
right.
They've got this, it's an amazing lineup. I'll just, it's the, they've got Glenn Frey's son replacing Glenn Frey, and they got Vince Gill on guitar and vocals. It's Joe Walsh, I would say one of the all-time top five guitar players I've ever seen live.
Oh my God. I like Joe
You got to
Walsh.
take Bri. I said that to you. You got to
You
take Bri.
did. I
Yeah.
checked the tour dates. It doesn't look like they're
They
coming
haven't
close to
announced New
here.
York yet. I don't think they've announced New York, the East Coast yet.
Oh, I'll keep checking. They're doing Canada, which, it's like 6 hours from here. But
Yeah.
anyway, I'm
No,
going to keep
I'm
checking.
sure they will. Yeah.
All right, I'll take it. It's funny because I would put the Eagles and Fleetwood Mac sort of in the same category that even if you're not a huge fan of theirs, like you don't play their records every day, there's something to be said by about going out to see those kind of bands. Because you're right, you'll never see that type
No.
of artist again. They just
You
don't
don't have
exist.
to ever play their records. I mean, I like Hotel California when it comes on the radio, and I love One of These Nights. You know, there's like a handful of songs of theirs that I like, but I haven't re but like every song that they played, the like acme of their 50 years in the business, everything is worth listening to, you know.
That's pretty cool that
There's a playlist on Spotify as well. If you can't make it to the show, there's a playlist on Spotify of the show, of the Forum show. And it's great.
That's pretty cool that Don read your book.
Yeah.
I
Oh,
like that.
cool.
It's so
I had
cool.
to drop that in. I had to share that, of course,
No,
but I'm
that's
such a show
super
off.
cool. So, you've given us more time than I had expected, so I appreciate it. My last question was, now that you're getting ready to do some shows coming up soon, like the beginning of February, you rehearse at home? Do you
Yeah,
warm
at the
yourself up
moment.
for how long in advance do you start getting back in?
I've been doing like 60 minutes a day, and I'm kind of moving up to 90 minutes a day. This morning was the first time I kind of went through the show and sort of reminded myself, you know, how to play, you know, a couple of the newer things that we're going to be doing. And you know, boys are coming in this week, and yeah, we're rehearsing next week. Yeah, it's you know, it's always exciting, and it just forces you out of your lethargy, and you know, you gotta get it on again, you know. It's good.
It is. It's great that you can, I don't want to say drop in because you guys do a lot of touring, but you can have a break and then get right back in. Your shows are
Yeah.
great. I think people feel that way about Duran Duran. And so many people who don't have any idea that I work with you will say, you know who's a great band that's still out on the road? Duran Duran. Like I hear all the time. And proud, really psyched for you, dude. So thank you for taking me through a walkthrough of your Dingwall bases because I really didn't know. And
Right.
that's great that so after the Rio design comes out, there's three more, those three colors you showed us, and they'll be available forever. So
Yeah.
okay. I'm gonna put
All right.
Tanner behind a bait. Just kidding.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being in the cafe, JT. We won't see you
Okay.
till around your birthday time. So be
Sounds good.
good and we'll speak to
Yep,
you
you
soon.
too.
All right, take
Okay.
care.
Bye-bye. Bye.